Hello and welcome to Bounty Hunt, a weekly breakdown of the latest episodes of Star Wars television brought to you by the Utini Podcast Network. I'm your host, Jacob, joined by my good friends, JG, Oz, and Caroline. This week, we're diving into The Acolyte Season 1, Episode 3 to give you our in-depth reactions and analysis. This week, we're brought to you by the Utini Dispatch, a weekly newsletter all about Star Wars and with little bits of nerd culture and sports. Check out utini.com/dispatch if you want to sign up. But with that out of the way, let's jump back into it. Caroline, welcome back. You were a wonderful guest for us with the Bad Batch Season 3, so we're happy to have you. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm glad to be back. Glad to be talking about live-action High Republic, which I kind of never thought we would get. Just happy to be here.
Yeah, it's a surreal moment for sure. JG, Oz, how are you two doing as well?
I can't complain, you know, like it's been said, we got High Republic, and this episode was my cup of tea.
Yeah, it's been quite a week since we last hung out. I've been thinking on it a lot and just like kind of dwelling on the content, which character's my favorite, all that. It even looks good on my phone. And yes, I am talking again about Star Wars Hunters.
Yeah, yeah.
We would expect nothing less.
I didn't have as good of connections to make as I did last week. But Star Wars Hunters is pretty fun, and the Acolyte is cool. So we've had a good week.
For sure. This episode three called the Destiny. I did not write that down initially. I had to scramble because I missed that on the show notes. So super excited to talk about that. If you are listening to the podcast, last week we did a fun little live thing. We might do some more in the future, but we are back to a pre-recorded show. But we're still excited to talk to you about this. But yeah, I think we should just jump into the discussion. I want to start off the bat with something I know JG will appreciate, and that is the music of this episode, because I thought the music was so phenomenal. I love music, but for me, so often when I'm like doing, like watching something, the soundtrack kind of falls in the background and I don't notice it as much. That did not happen this week. So shout out Michael Abels. Absolutely demolish this one.
I love that you actually put it right here, right in the beginning, because when we even open up in that episode, the music starts out with like the first two notes of the Force theme, and then it completely changes and it's completely different. So Michael Abels is cooking. I am so happy. I know that we haven't really gotten too much into what he normally does, and I think that is definitely coming. I think you bring him on for that reason, but so far what he's been doing has been completely like incredible.
Yeah, I think this was the first episode of this season where, Jacob, kind of like you said, I was consciously thinking about the music and realizing just how much it did set the tone for so much of the episode. Star Wars music is, you know, so iconic in so many ways, and so I'm really glad that this show is starting to kind of make its mark in that library.
Yeah, they posted a like really short, like 1 minute interview clip on Twitter and probably YouTube as well, with Michael Abels like talking about his process and some of the things he did for the season. And I know he talked about using the Force theme, but also kind of like doing riffs and variations on it. But then there was also another one where he's like, yeah, I wrote this like one little like bit that you will hear basically every time someone like goes through loss or experiences tragedy. So go listen to that. Keep an eye out for it. I'm sure we're going to hear it a lot this season, because I think a lot of people are going to hear that at least like three more times at least. So, yeah, but it was a great start. But going into the episode,
also, notably, we'll get to this later when they're doing the ritual. But like something that's very rare in Star Wars music is vocals. And now some of it was sort of What's the word that you love to use, Jacob? Diegetic?
Oh, yeah.
Diegetic.
Yeah. Diegetic, yeah. The characters are actually singing, but there's also a lot more getting piped in. Like, the most notable vocals, obviously, are on Duel of the Fates. Mm-hmm. There's probably some others in some of the TV shows, but that was, like, a very unique moment.
Yeah, like, John Williams talks about that being, like, a big new thing when he, like, got to the prequels. So it was, like, it's easy for us to just kind of assume that it's always been there now, 20 years later, but it was very big a change for Star Wars, because before that, right. I think the only thing was, like, the Emperor's theme, probably, that had any sort of vocal track to it.
And it's nothing like Duel of the Fates, which we were just talking about. They aired music videos for Duel of the Fates back on MTV in 99 as the ramp up to the movie, which I did not remember from when I was a kid.
But yeah, like, I was three, so I really did not.
Yeah,
that's bad.
I was I had a 15-year-old sister, so MTV was on in our house a lot. And yeah, it's just like crazy how big that. I know that MTV wasn't like, oh, you got vocals, we can show you now, but like that's just how hyped that track was back then. But anyway, that's just a cool kind of connection back.
Yeah, for sure. Going into the episode a little bit, we have an episode entirely of flashback, which I don't know about you all. I did not expect it, and I especially did not expect it this early in the season. I thought we would tease our mystery out a lot longer. So we had a full episode set on Brandock with Child Osha as the main POV. But I do think we'll probably get more as the season goes on, just because there's a lot of questions left unanswered, and we'll probably see some things from the Jedi's point of view and Mei and the witches themselves. But what do you all think about the idea or the choice to do a full POV episode only 3 episodes in?
I think it was pretty smart because they laid the groundwork, getting us like caught up with like the present story, getting us to know like kind of the stakes, where we're at, but then we're able to like not really like beat around the bush. We just go back and like tell the story. Like we were all, after last week, we were all wondering like, the big mystery of the show is what happened that night. Well, like, while we don't know like the fully what happened that night, we have a good gist of what happened now. So like, instead of like other shows where we're like, oh, we'll wait another 4 or 5 episodes, we'll get there. They're like, no, we are moving this plot forward. And while moving the plot forward, we do have to go back though.
Yeah, I really like that they seem to be like narrowing down what the mystery is instead of letting people just kind of like wander about like any little thing. Not that they're like force feeding it to us, but because I felt the same way about, you know, wondering if Osha had a twin in the first episode, right? I was like, okay, how long are they going to drag this out? And then they answered it pretty quickly. And so I feel like this flashback episode kind of served the same purpose of like, mm-hmm. not going to tease you along for multiple episodes for there to be a reveal only at the end, but for everything to kind of actually like fall into place at a pretty nice pace. And I think that's why I enjoyed, like you, Jacob, I didn't expect us to be in a flashback so early, but I enjoyed it being this early because it's just kind of leading us along the path.
Yeah, that and like a full episode of it. I think we talked last week about sort of how that was structured as 2 episodes. Could it have been 1 episode? But this, like, this is not formatted like a movie. That's been sort of a complaint of some of the other live action shows, both with Star Wars and with Marvel, is that it's just like a movie broken up into more parts than it needed. Whereas this was like, this is a separate chapter that kind of needs to be its own thing. So that I liked, that they made it a whole episode for that. I don't know about putting it here, especially with like how last episode ended with showing Kel Naka. I think they could have just cut off that Kel Naka scene and not, because I don't know, now I was sort of let down that we didn't get to see, I know we saw him, but we didn't get to see him on his little exile planet. That's such a minor quibble though, like it doesn't actually matter. I know we'll get there either next week or whenever, but it was cool to see. And yeah, you're right, we'll definitely get more. I don't think we were in for another full episode of flashback. I think that would be too much.
Yeah, no, I think we'll get chunks but not a full episode. I will say, hey, on the Kel Naka side of things, Oz, we did wait 1.5 years to resume the story of Phase 1 of the High Republic. So, you know, I think one
yeah,
week.
And I have thoughts about that.
Oh, I sure you do.
Yeah. There's a reason that we try to stick mostly to the show here, because I would tangent myself out of existence.
All right. Well, before I let you go down that path, I'd like getting into, I guess, the actual things that happened in this episode. We open up on a shot of the Boonta tree, which, if you remember, was the tree whose leaves were used to make the poison that Mei uses to kill Torben in the second episode of the series. So we're kind of already starting off with this part of the world they grew up on. And seeing Mei and Osha use the Force on these little, like, kind of glowing butterfly-type creatures.
It was giving very, like, Garden of Eden kind of vibes, and mm-hmm. very, like, could this planet maybe have more of a centric point to the Force than maybe like we're led to believe initially and everything? And that is the initial thoughts. I was like, oh, this is a tree and it has the poison, but it also is like very pretty and has the light and everything, and very much gave that essence.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know if it's, you know, a special Force planet like Moriband or Tython or anything like that. But the Jedi do mention that it's uninhabited, I guess, other than this coven. So it's a sort of a native world and like untouched by human. It's just sort of free living, which is nice to see them interacting with nature, even though they kind of instantly threatened to kill one of these little things, which was sort of messed up.
It's fine. I like JG, you mentioned just kind of the vibes overall of that little area. Caroline, we are both Rings of Power enjoyers. I don't know about you, but like the lighting and like the gold tree kind of give me some Valinor.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Caroline's, oh, you mentioned Tolkien. Let's go.
And specifically Rings of Power.
Yeah. Season 2 coming out soon. Hell yeah.
Yep.
But we bring these kids back to their little coven and in this like citadel of sorts, and all of this episode is leading up to their ascension, their little ceremony. And we're going to kind of jump around a little bit before we really dive deep on some like important parts of the episode. I really liked how they kind of used natural hair in this as they kind of prepare for the ceremony. That is not something I mean, obviously the characters have it as adults, but it's like another thing I think to actually show like them getting twists put in. I thought that was pretty interesting. And even in the StarWars.com trivia write-up, they mentioned like, oh yeah, we were inspired by like, you know, this certain style of hair, and like normally you would use like wax or I think whatever to like help seal them, but we're on movie set, so this is what we did instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was really touched by that scene actually. Both times I watched, because I watched the episode a couple times, and both times like that scene, I just kind of like stopped every other thought and was just watching that scene and thought about how beautiful it was to see that, and just how cool that representation is, but also kind of like you said, to take that moment and treat natural hair with like such respect on screen, and especially in, like you said, in Star Wars, hair isn't really focused on
outside of Leia, yeah,
Leia and Padme.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
but yeah, no, for sure.
But yeah, I like that I had that moment.
Also, like on this topic, Mother Anna Seyes look phenomenal. Yeah.
10 out of 10.
Mother is mothering, I believe it's what the kids say.
There was, you know, of course, Yord Horde is all the talk of the town if you're on social media. And a lot of the other characters have like fan club names that are a little less known. One of the ones I saw for her was Mother Lovers, and you know,
yeah,
leave it at that. Workshop that one.
Leave it at that. I said Anasea Army. I don't know. You know, we'll see.
I think Anasea is just a tough name to like do wordplay with.
A lot of syllables.
Yeah.
But anyways. We, you know, they're preparing for the ascension. There's a lot of tension, obviously, with their fate and what they both want out of life and the stress of being twins and being the only children. But we arrive at this ascension ceremony, nonetheless. And I really love the visual of the moons above the planet, because that is also, you know, if you were paying attention, the logo, you have like the, I'm assuming two suns and two moons, because you have one that has a blue halo and one has an orange halo. But yeah, this replaced the early logo of just block letters with a slash through it with this double halo, also twins, double people. I thought it was a very cool visual for sure.
I like the visual a lot. Something we actually haven't talked about, we didn't mention last week. I don't like the show logo.
That's fair.
When, like, in the opening, I'm just like, something about it I don't dig. I really liked the first one, even if though this one is maybe more thematically good. I think it was that we mentioned that I believe there's a comic book coming out about Kelnaka, and the logo looks really dumb on a comic book because different contexts, things will look different. And since then, I just can't, I don't know, again, a minor quibble. It looked, the moon thing, like you said, looks sick. I just wish that the logo and intro was different, which is not the point of the discussion here, but I had to get that off my chest. It was really important.
Seeing the moons was like a big aha moment. I was like, oh, that's why there's like the double O in
this.
Yes. Like, I've been wondering right. So many things. Like, is it like two rings? Is it two like crowns? Like, what could it be? And it's just simply two moons.
It's definitely
which means they probably like filmed this scene or whatever, you know, they were working on this, and then someone was like, oh, we could make that the logo. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I think so. But hey, if it is rings, you know, Oz rings a veil, you know, hey, one red, one blue.
Do it's what?
Rings a veil. This is a Dr. Aphra 2020 reference.
Oh, gosh. Dude, Dr. Aphra stuff is so hard to keep track of. Yes. I don't think that's what it is.
It's not what it is, but hey, but it's visually similar. But it's also a cool thing about like moons and moon cycles and stuff like that, and kind of how that has been tied to like real world traditional, like, you know, witchcraft or whatever, however you want to describe that. That's always kind of been a big focus of some of these, I guess, traditional religions or whatever. So that's pretty cool. But we, you know, not all is as it would be. OSHA does not get branded with the little swirl tattoo thingy because the Jedi have arrived to break this up. And I think this is when things start to get a little interesting because we learn that children are not allowed to be trained by non-Jedi in the Force in the galaxy under Republic law, which I think is very interesting, especially like talking about the High Republic, given what we saw in like Phase 2 on Jedha. So I wonder what people's thoughts are on that and how we kind of arrive here.
Messed up.
Yeah.
I think the anti-Jedi fans keep getting just loads and loads of ammo from this episode in particular. Like one of the biggest just sources of like, man, the Jedi are not always right. Like, yeah, they're the good guys. And again, that's the whole point of this show, is to show their fall and how we got to a group of people who would let Palpatine take over the galaxy. But like, Indara, yeah, she comes in real hot, and first off, they're, you know, assumedly innocent people just getting spied on by the Jedi. They break into their holy ceremony. They say like, this is illegal, even though we do it, we're allowed to. That I don't really feel like there's any justification given for why what they're doing should be bad, other than we know May ends up being bad. Like, it's only shown to us because of the end result, which is not really compelling yet. Now, May, I think there's more to learn, but it's super hypocritical.
Yeah. It really, I think you nailed it perfectly. Like, they just come in And it's almost like they're really pushing, like, could they even clearly say, like, we're not even under Republic jurisdiction. Like, what are you even doing here? Mm-hmm. And it's very much the Jedi just in this moment, like, having that, like, we are right attitude, and not, you know, what we've seen in the earlier, like, days of what we've read in the books of the High Republic.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this, like, the TV show will ever explain in the text why the galaxy has arrived this way. I would be interested to see maybe, hey, like, a late Phase 3 book or comic story tells, like, a hey, you know, like, the galaxy's gone through all this stuff. We can't trust people anymore. We're going to have to, like, lock that stuff down. And I do think it provides, like, a nice, like, in-world explanation for why we don't see, like, the Sorcerers of Toon running around randomly in, like, Episode 1. Like, hey, we are
It's like Guardians of the Wills, which are
right.
It's shown to more be like keepers of the mm-hmm. holy city, like almost.
Yeah, there's the disciples, which is the more spiritual side of that group. But like, I still get the vibe that, I mean, hey, go read Guardians of the Wills, the middle grade book, if you want more on this. They're definitely like not the same force they were in the High Republic, even before I think the Empire rises.
I mean, Bay's like barely even agree, like, cares about the dogma of it. He really just like wants to protect Jedha. Chirrut's really the only true believer that it seems that they have still, which now that we're kind of digging into these alternative Force users, I know we've seen the Night Sisters and stuff, but there's a lot of opportunity for storytelling, either, you know, down in the Dawn of the Jedi movies or in the New Jedi Order movies, something like that. I would love to see more of that, because this is a very unique group of people, even different than the Phase 2 groups we see, this coven, whoever they are. I want to know more about them.
I agree.
Yeah, for sure.
I am interested in like y'all were talking about, like the Jedi come in talking about how like they're kind of the only ones who can train people. Mother Anisea does say that, like, I think in the training session with the kids, that like there would be people who look down on what they do specifically because they're using, quote, dark forces. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know how much of, you know, the Jedi's attitude is specifically about them possibly using the dark side, or if it is just kind of overall force usage.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like maybe it was, like, if you're talking about what, like, the justification, maybe, like, it was painted as, like, all these other people are using the dark side and we have to clamp down on it. She does talk specifically about this, like, right before the ascension starts. She's like, yeah, we were, like, cast out because they said we used the dark side and yep, exiled right. And, like, you know, all this bad thing happens to us because they say we used the dark side.
I think that's what we're going to find out is they were exiled from wherever they were. So I think the Jedi have been watching them with some sort of justification, just that we're not given yet. And maybe as the story gets reframed, we'll be like, oh, wait, no, the Jedi were totally right this whole time, it turns out. I mean, not totally right, probably, because, again, some of Endara's stuff was a little questionable. But we've got a lot more to learn about. Do we even know what this coven calls themselves?
I think it's called, like, the Coven of the Witches or something like that.
the Coven of the Witches.
I can check real quick, but yeah, I think it was something pretty simple like that.
They haven't branded yet. They're still early.
Okay, Wikipedia just calls it Anisea's Coven, so I don't think we have a good official name yet.
We'll get there.
I also wonder, like, and this will, I will bring this up later when we get to future theory clownery, but I do wonder if, like, in addition to the planet, in addition to maybe what the reason of the Jedi being there is that when we're first zooming in on the planet and such, we see quite a bit of ruins and such. And if the Jedi are thinking that this place is deserted, if it's deserted, then that means that there's someone there before. Who was there before? Could that be our friends, the Sith? Could that be some other dark side craziness coming up? So I do wonder if that will play into it and maybe also, like Oz said, reframe why the Jedi were there in the first place.
I forgot about the ruins. I didn't remember that. Yeah. So that kind of goes against what I said earlier about this being like an untouched world.
Well, and obviously it seemed to me like they just, you know, this citadel was there before they got to the planet. They're like, oh, we like showed up. This is a great opportunity for us. We're going to take this like abandoned fortress for ourselves.
I guess that's a good point. It would be tough to believe that those like 16 women threw together this thing with like a kick-ass forge in the middle or whatever the hell that is.
I mean, the Force could do crazy things, as we've learned.
The Force provides.
Luke has his Boston Dynamics dogs building up his temple. Maybe these ladies have something similar.
Oh, man, I forgot that was a thing.
I'm never going to let that go.
It's just so obvious, too.
They were dressed up well, but it was so clearly the Boston Dynamics robot.
Someone gave the prop master just too much of a budget. And they're like, what if we, you know, bought a few of these for fun?
He had a friend who worked there. I've been at conventions with those dogs, and they're really sick.
Yeah.
But anyways, not a random podcast.
Back to this, you know, the Jedi and the ban on other Force groups training children. They say that the Jedi have the right to test potential Padawans. I think this is interesting. You know, they can obviously say, no, they don't want to go, but the Jedi have the ability to test them.
Yeah, we joked about this last night. She says, we have the right to do this, and then kind of clarify with your permission. So it's like, okay, well then you don't, then what right do you have? Yeah. Anyone can do a test with permission. That was, yeah, again, Endara just coming off real like the Jedi are the only important thing in the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
They don't love that.
Yeah. And like after they leave this little session, they go back and the kids are talking with Mother Anisea about potentially getting tested. And she talks to them about, like, this line. She says, this is about power and who's allowed to use it, which I thought was very interesting because this is, like, a quote that Leslie Headland used to basically pitch the show in, like, the past, like, I don't know, right. 6 months or so. Like, she very directly said this exact thing word for word. So we're really kind of starting to see this play out now in the show itself.
Now, do you think when she said that, she's saying, the way I read it is that they have been told they're not allowed to use it, and they're kind of pushing back, versus her saying, we don't think others should use it? Or how do y'all take that quote to mean? You know, like, because basically she's saying, like, the Jedi are saying we're not allowed to use power, but we have power. Or is she saying we're the only ones who should wield our power like this?
I think it's the first one.
I think the former.
Largely
because she also, I mean, you know, they just kind of focus so much on, like, they've been outcast and they've had to come to this planet for safety and all that. And so I feel like it is from this kind of, like, outsider chip on her shoulder perspective more than anything.
For sure. But we do eventually move on to them going to training. They are told, hey, lie about it, and, you know, just, like, you know, stay here, you're gonna be fine. I thought it was super interesting that we walk, like, into this field, and the ship very much just looks like it's out of the same family as, like, the Vector or the Ataraxia. If you've been reading the High Republic books and comics, like, it fits that family so well, I think, from a visual standpoint.
It's the red stripe.
It is the red stripe.
Yeah.
And the general, like, shape of the ship as well. But then we go in and we have a very similar interaction to Anakin in The Phantom Menace. We do the little blood test. They pull out the same little, basically looks like a handheld mirror, but it has a TV on it, and ask him to say what's on the screen. So,
two things. One, I think that obviously it's the same scene as Phantom Menace. I liked that it wasn't Spaceship Cup and Speeder again, but that she did her fake guess was Spaceship. I thought that I really wanted her next one to be Cup, but I know that's me asking for fan service, but that's subtle enough that I thought it was a good reference. But then also just, like, I cracked up at how hard she fumbled. Like, when she was like, no, that wasn't a whatever. Like, that wasn't a tree. And then and Saul's like, I gotcha, you idiot. OSHA
remember,
messed
kids
up.
Are dumb. Yeah,
OSHA messed up real quick.
But we go from this that, you know, OSHA has passed the test, and she has a conversation with Mother Anasaya about her future and all that. We'll get that more in our deep dive section. But then we arrive at the fire, the scene of the crime, the whodunit, it is happening. And there's a lot that's going on here. When OSHA is, like, in the wall, well, first off, the fire is insane. I have seen people be like, how is this from just a notebook? It's very obviously not. So let's just kind of let's get that out of the way. Something's going on here. Stone doesn't just catch fire. There are other forces at play here.
Which, speaking of the notebook, though, a real quick fun little sicko thing: paper. We don't get that a whole lot.
Paper is very rare. Yeah.
This is I guess only, like, the second live action appearance. Maybe I don't know if it's an Andor at all.
It's the ancient text, obviously, in The Last Jedi, and I guess also Rise of Skywalker.
Right. And then this. And then if you really know your stuff, the caution sign in the deleted scene from Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, God, with the one with the Wampa, like, comes out.
The C-3PO rips off. But, yeah, I always get excited to see paper. It's like, ooh, fun, because originally there was no paper in Star Wars.
So we, like, OSHA goes into hiding in a wall, and we hear, like, explosions ahead, and the witches all scream. And then she pops out of the wall, and the Jedi are already there, which is already, like, red flag. I guess before we see Sol, her and May are on the other side of a collapsed platform, and they are screaming at each other, what have you done? So obviously, like, we know what OSHA's asking about, but what is May asking about? Like, what is it that OSHA has done?
On my second watch, I found her, like, I think she put the emphasis on you, like, what have you done?
Yep.
And I think the first time I watched it, I took that as, like, pretty accusatory of, like, you know. But then on second rewatch, I started thinking about maybe it's just the way she's kind of framing this whole situation of, like, you left me no choice but to start this fire. And that it was you, you know, breaking your promise and all that, that has actually led to this.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was my first impression, like, on my first watch. Now I'm like, I don't know if there's something more here, maybe, like, from her perspective, from Mei's perspective, it's like Osha, what Osha did brought the Jedi here. And if she didn't do this, the Jedi wouldn't have gotten involved in whatever way they have.
I also, it's such a quick turn to murdering your sister.
It's quick.
I also wonder, because, again, this would go down into my clown theory down the road, but I also really do wonder if Mei is even truly herself right now. Especially after my second rewatch here, I really do wonder how much of this is actually Mei and not.
You think she's possessed?
I had that thought too.
Yeah,
because she, again, we'll get in a little later. She walks away. The last time we see her before that was her walking away with Coral, and I think Coral is sus. So, but we.
I think maybe, you know, like under the guidance of either Coral or someone else, like she's gotten bad advice or whatever, but I don't feel like she's possessed, which I guess you could argue brainwashed, possessed, whatever.
Yeah,
that's fair. So all this happens, Mei plummets down the hole, but as we know in Star Wars, if you fall from a great height, you are not dead. That is the golden rule. So no shocker, she lives into the future.
Unless you're tech,
RIP. But so then we, like, you know, Sol comes and saves her again, kind of like reflecting on her saving her from falling in the first episode of the season. And then we, like, walk out into this, the meeting room we saw earlier, and all the witches are dead on the ground. And at first I was like, oh, they, you know, the obvious thing is like the explosion above killed them. I saw some people like wondering if they were poisoned. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, obviously the poison, like, is like a key factor in this story, but like I don't know, I just don't know what the visual cue was that they were poisoned. I don't know if you all had thoughts on that.
I think just the fact that they're not burned or crushed,
that's true.
I don't know, I mean, you could see them, they're lying there in a pile, people die of, you know, head trauma, whatever, but like it's, the fire hadn't gotten super out of control yet. And just like the Jedi being on the scene really fast, this is sus. So I think poison's an option, and maybe we'll talk theories in a bit, but that could be, you know, sort of a Jonestown kind of thing under Mother Anaseya, like convincing them, or Mei poisoning them because, I don't know, reasons. There's a lot of opportunity here. But poison with, I mean, with the poison in the second episode, plus they were at the Boonta tree at the beginning, and Mei is literally like, it's a dangerous tree. Like, don't get close to it or whatever, or whichever one of them says that.
Yeah.
Is it Osha who warns her about the tree? Because that's kind of funny.
I think it was Mei, because Osha's there first.
That's what I thought, but yeah. Osha worrying about the safety at on the job site, I would like that.
Five more episodes for that to
We gotta get her like telling someone to put on a hard hat.
Yeah,
hey, she violated labor laws in the very first episode, so I don't know if she's the best person to do that. So you see all this, and you know Sol doesn't let her really linger on, but then we go out into the courtyard, and Anaseya is out there by herself, also dead obviously, but you know, that was something that hit me on my second watch. It's like, well, why is she out here by herself? Like, was she out confronting the Jedi or whoever? Like, what, you know, she was supposed to have her meeting with everyone else, so why was she alone out in the courtyard? So.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what's leading me to think maybe she had something to do with the deaths of the coven. It doesn't really make sense to me that, like, they were all dying and she happened to, like, try to crawl to the exit and died elsewhere. If she died to the same thing that they died to, they should be together.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. A lot of theories, a lot of clownery that can happen, but let's do some bigger deep dives now. I want to start with the thread, which is like what they call the Force, essentially. A lot of super interesting quotes on how they kind of view the Force here. They're talking about how it ties you to your destiny and binds you to others. And also, like, about how just generally the galaxy does not welcome women such as them. So, like, you know, there's, I think there's layers there as well of, you know, not just their power. Also, they are black women. They are refugees. Like, there's a lot going on here, a lot of layers. But yeah, the thread is definitely an interesting aspect of their characters generally.
And they did cool stuff with their hands to illustrate that metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
I love when Star Wars, like, we actually, like, we talked about it a little bit earlier, but I love when we get to explore, like, the different groups that, like, you know, either study or have adoration towards the Force. Like, we see that in Rebels with, like, the Lasaan, if I'm saying that correctly.
Yeah.
Okay. It's been a minute. But, like, I just love that we get to explore that. And, you know, it mirrors, like, you know, our reality and such, and how all there's so many different religions, but, like, really, if you look at it, there's a lot that just parallel the same. And so the Force is very similar in that way. So whenever people say, oh, like, oh, this doesn't make any sense or whatever, I'm like, just look out your window. It's right there. It's really not that hard.
Yeah, well, and depending on what church is nearby you in your neighborhood, there might be some fun schisms going on right now that you can watch if you want some parallels. There's a good chance a denomination nearby you is holding a vote this year for something.
All right, moving on.
I'm not weighing in on what the Methodist Church should do about
it. Okay, we do not endorse any one denomination, nor do we cast them down, but we're moving on.
One thing about the thread itself, even though I was thinking along the lines of JG as well, but one thing that stood out to me too was just the actual visuals of it. Like, a lot of the time you don't really see much, but then during the ascension, like, having that kind of, like, purplish kind of glow on May's forehead when she's getting the, like, tattoo, I guess it is, I thought was really cool. And, like, yeah, you don't normally see, I mean, I don't know, at least not all the time regularly, like, a actual kind of physical manifestation of the Force.
For sure. And the ascension itself is a very interesting scene with that. Like, they have, like, their chant, the power of one, the power of two, the power of many. Obviously, you know, like, these are important sayings to them. They also say it while she's in, the training session earlier in the episode. And you have the power of two of the twins, a very obvious metaphor there. Like, there's a lot going on there. It's kind of interesting to see all of this. And, you know, also just, like, the idea of pulling on a thread from, like, one end or two ends and stuff like that. And then the thread itself being their little swirly tattoo as well. Very interesting. A lot of cool stuff going on there. But then another thing she says when she's talking to the twins in a calm moment is, like, what the thread has tied together, no one can separate, which I think plays into JG's clown theory, I think, from last week, talking about the ultimate fates of the sisters being tied to each other. She actually says this during the ceremony itself, during the ascension, but they have tied May to the end, but fail to tie Osha to it. So I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that could happen there. There's a lot, like, you know, because we still have yet to see how Osha's going to react to, you know, her world around her caving in and such. And so what is her reaction going to be? Is there going to be maybe towards the end, is she going to, you know, do the ascension and then they will be connected at that point? Is there something that's coming down the path with the Sith and whatnot? I do think that, like I've said, their fates are intertwined for better or for worse. And unfortunately, more than likely, for worse.
Yeah. And another, like, thing while they're in that moment, the, like, little oath that they take was to uphold the coven after her mom dies. And obviously her mom's dead. And this is, you know, probably a lot of the reason why May has taken up this mission in the present day to go after all the Jedi that have, in her eyes, wronged her coven. Maybe also literally wronged the coven, but we'll get to that later.
It's very also, just to bounce off that real quick, it's very also, like, Sith coded, like, also in just in the very simple sense of, like, you could just very clearly see how a Sith could come in and twist everything that has happened. Well, you know, it is pretty straightforward here from what we're seeing. There's obviously still a lot more layers, but you could definitely see how these events have been twisted to center on this mission, in parallel, of course, with, as we've talked and the internet has talked, with Anakin.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And like, another thing is, like, Leslie Headland had talked about how she was inspired by the Night Sisters. And if you've read the Galaxy's Edge exclusive Myths and Fables, there's a story about Darth Maul, very good, by George Mann, that talks about how Sidious basically comes in and corrupts the Night Sisters through Mother Talzin. So another parallel you got there of the ability to kind of hijack this belief system.
Maybe this coven of witches, Jacob, is somehow related to Bug.
Oh God, we haven't had a bug theory yet. Even though we
it's
are
been a while,
100, you know, years, 120 years pre-bug. But
yeah, but hey, maybe that's the twist.
Imagine.
I cannot imagine.
No, I cannot. So I want to move on to, I thought, another really interesting aspect. Obviously, fear is a like central, like, element and theme that's explored a lot in Star Wars, but I really liked how it was explored in this episode, because you like have Mother Anna Seya talking to Osha about her decision to want to become a Jedi, and basically say, like, fear can't really rule your life. It can't make this decision for you. You have to make it for yourself. And like, Osha is like, I mean, generally afraid, but she's not afraid of this decision. And I don't think Mother Anna Seya is afraid either. Like, she was, like, for me, surprisingly open and loving to these like decisions, just based on like my consent, like preconceived notions going into the episode. But there's a lot of other fear that I kind of like think was important, and that's like the fear of the coven, and the fear of Mother Coral, and the fear of May, and how those kind of all play off each other and interact with the presence of the Jedi.
I think. Well, to your first point, I don't know if Mother Anna Seya is all that chill. I think she might have some fear we're not seeing, because we haven't seen her POV once she leaves that conversation with Osha.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the Jedi, once again, they definitely either have a fear or a hatred, probably hatred based in fear of this coven. That's why they've got Soul tracking them. Mm-hmm. And then for Coral, I mean, the obvious answer is she's like the harsh mom versus mm-hmm. Anna Seya, but there could be something deeper there. Like, they're not just scared of punishment or anything, but like, if it's her kind of whispering in May's ear that's kind of driving her to the dark side, maybe there's that kind of fear. And the fear of May is sort of obvious, because she, you know, from the moment she tried to kill the butterfly, that sort of escalated to her, I'm going to kill my sister. So I'd be scared of her too.
I think you have kind of like almost like a split between like, Osha is just so much more reflective of Anna Seya, and May is so much more reflective of Coral, and kind of a line down the middle between the two of them. And I do think, you know, you said that, you know, there's maybe more we don't know about Anna Seya. Maybe she does have fear, but just like, I think like the interaction of them talking about parenting the kids at the very beginning, she's like, you know, hey, they ran off, but did anyone see them? Like, we're fine here. Like, yeah, it's going to be okay. I do think generally her and Osha are just more open and, I don't know, free willing people.
I agree.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see sort of Anna Seya's thoughts, because we're definitely not done with her. She's a complicated person, because we're led to believe she's this kind of rigid, maybe not as rigid as Coral, but like this leader of, for lack of a better word, a cult, potentially, is often how we see these dark side groups. And then, yeah, I mean, if she really is like, okay, you can go with the Jedi, that's sort of a subversion of what you think she's going to think. But maybe that's not really what she thinks, and this meeting with the coven is like, all right, let's go kill the Jedi or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I there's a lot going on here. I want to move into the background of the twins, because this is, I think, it's kind of just really transitioned to clownery about what is, like, what created them? How are they here? Lots of theories, of course. You know, during the very beginning when they're kind of fighting about their parenting, Coral mentions how they're not normal children. And Anasaya calls them special later on. They talk about the gift and miracle of life. And then we finally arrive to the point where Anasaya says they have no father, and Coral carried them, but Anasaya created them. And what the act of creation apparently is not chill, because they're afraid of the Jedi finding out. So, you know, there's a lot going on, a lot of room for clownery and theories. What is everyone's thoughts on how the twins came to be?
I think it's, first I thought it was kind of like beautiful the way that they were like, just talking about it and such, and just seeing it from the perspective of the two mothers.
Happy Pride Month, by the way.
Heck yeah.
yeah. We joked last week. I don't think we said this on the show, but I hadn't even noticed that they referenced mothers and when about Mason in the fire. But someone was like, well, maybe it's just witches and it's a coven. So when the episode started, I was like, oh, it is just a coven, not gay moms. And then like 60 seconds later, I was like, oh, cool, it's both.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, go ahead, Gigi.
You know, I don't know how much we want to get into clownery, but I do think, you know, I don't think this is like anything super crazy. I don't like, I mean, it is crazy, but like, I don't think it like quote unquote breaks the rules of Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. We've
seen stuff like this before. It's very intriguing. And I think the big thing, I think more than anything, I think people should be focusing on out of any of this whole thing is that line there, like, what happens if the Jedi found out how you created them? Like, that is like my big red flag. Like, what? What do you mean you don't want that? And I think that plays into more clownery. So I'll let anyone else feed in before I say anything crazy.
I mean, the obvious parallel is Darth Plagueis, which I think that's kind of where your clownery is maybe pointed in that direction. That's sort of the easy assumption to make, which is kind of why I think it's not that. Not just that it's not literally Darth Plagueis, but that like it's something maybe beyond just we created them with the Force. And I don't have a next step in that sentence because I can't think of anything of what it would be. So maybe it is just that simple.
Something's
going on.
I think the Force, like I was saying when we were talking about this episode last night, I do think there is some Force going on. Like, obviously, she does say there is no father. And if that is genuine, either there's a Force thing happening or, like, IVF is goated in the Star Wars universe. So, you know, one of those two things is true. Maybe both are true. I don't know. I think it would be really interesting to have, you know, maybe it's not Darth Plagueis. Maybe, like, the Sith directly didn't do it. But, like, Mother Anasaya makes a metaphorical deal with the devil with a Sith or a Darksider to learn how to do this on her own and create them herself. And then, you know, these chickens come to roost later on when Mei eventually becomes an acolyte. I think that's an interesting way to explore it. And no, I don't think it breaks canon. I think it's just another cool way of examining the mythology of the Force.
I feel like at this point, I'm pretty convinced that Yeah, it has something to do with the dark side of the Force, excuse me. Whether or not that also being Sith, I'm starting to believe that, I think, because at one point in the episode, I can't remember when, but I think Anasaya says something about like either like the power they wield is unnatural or something about like how the girls came to be is unnatural or something. She used the word unnatural. I remember that. Mm-hmm. And then I noticed at some point today, I think in our Discord, someone posted a screen cap of Palpatine talking about like the ways of the Sith have, you know, many practices that many consider to be unnatural.
Part of the Darth Plagueis speech.
Yeah. Yeah. And so now I can't disconnect the two in my brain, which is probably just me getting tunnel vision. I don't know. But
yeah, I think what's like, the quote is what? The dark side of the Force is a pathway to abilities that many see as unnatural.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Something along those lines. I Yeah, I mean, we'll go ahead and talk about it since we're already on the subject. I think this is technically one of the community questions later, but like
Yes. Yep.
the thing that we've been back and forth on is Darth Plagueis going to be involved in the story, and I've been kind of anti it, but something that I think could work for me is if this is almost like a first draft, like a test of him creating life. And so maybe it's like not fully by the force, or I don't know. I don't want to get too much in the science of it. We talked about that on Bad Batch a lot. Like, I don't need to know the DNA ins and outs, but like, I think this could maybe be Darth Plagueis sort of using them as pawns for eventually making his like chosen one perfect baby that becomes Anakin, which is still not technically confirmed
Yeah,
that he
no.
did. If
Correct.
I don't know if either of y'all were reading the comics.
The Darth Vader one. Yeah,
Charles
I read
Soule's
that one.
2017 run. There is a
25.
there's an yeah, there's an issue that very kind of, I would say, confirms the thing, but he sort of came out and said like, no, this was just like
It
a
was a vision of Anakin.
yeah.
So, yeah,
But it
unreliable.
shows this creepy panel of Palpatine and then like Shmi's womb or something like that, like almost
Oh, I
direct
remember.
connection. But there was like a lot of pushback from the fan community when that book came out. Because it's like, wait, so are you confirming that? Even though it's been a very commonly held theory for a long time, because it's pretty textual the way they explain it, I would say, in the prequels.
The prequels are is one thing. The Darth Plagueis book, although never explicitly says it, definitely lead gives a lot more credence to that theory. And we do have to remember that Leslye Headland is a Legends EU enjoyer from back in the day, and specifically around like the Darth Bane trilogy and stuff like that. That
Yes.
era is what she's talked about. So you never know what influences might have led into her writing.
Right. So yeah, I don't know if Plagueis himself is involved, but I could see there being a chain there that's how we get Plagueis or Tenebris or whoever is maybe the current rule of two going on gets tied into this. I still don't know if that's what I want, but I think I could be sold on it.
I think mine kind of goes a little bit with that, in that I don't know if it is Plagueis or not, but I think it's definitely Sith. I think ultimately, from what I'm seeing now, is that it does look like, the witches, they were outcasts, they're looking for a home and everything. They find a way, or they come in path with the Sith. The Sith make a deal to basically, they want to be able to move forward and have this child, and as a result, they also then secure them this home that was originally Sith origins on there. That's why it's all pre-built up. That's why there's some creepy looking broken statues and all that. Ultimately, the Sith want these children to, and I believe it's the apprentice. So the apprentice wants these children to eventually overthrow the master. Basically, like you said, Oz gives her like the recipe, I guess, if you want to call it that, to get this job done. Kind of let them do it just in case maybe there's something bad that could happen. And then that leads them to where they are now. Because I do think. Like I and just with like what Caroline was saying and with the unnatural and then with everything with the two, like I don't think that's a coincidence. Like there's so much, with the power of the number of two and all of that with this coven. Like it's so like yeah, you could just say that it's just parallels or whatnot, but I think it's like intrinsically connected to
For the record, I do not want to call it the recipe. I don't like that word.
the Sith.
Just like, it's
The
spice
spell,
cream,
does
your
that
spice
make you feel
cream
better?
recipe, or
yeah.
Spell, does that work better?
It's the opening sequence to Powerpuff Girls is
Yeah.
how they were created.
Yeah.
Just a little ingredient X or whatever. Yeah.
Hemagol
All right. I think
X, I think it is.
Chemical X. Yeah,
Oh,
it's been a
thank you. I
while.
knew that didn't sound right.
Yeah. So it's been, I think we should go ahead and move into our clownery, our questions, and round this out. We have a few listener questions. If you want to ask a listener question yourself, and you are, a listener, you've made it this far, check out our Discord, utini.com/discord. We put up a little thread every week right before we record the show, so anyone can join this. We have a few today. One is from Lando. This one's already been, we've kind of talked about this. We just did, but I'll shout it out. He asked, what do we mean by these sisters being created? And, you know, we're a little split. Most of us are on the Force train, but Oz, a little less, needs some convincing. So,
yeah, well, a thing I just thought of, we'll give Lando a little bit of time to actually talk about his question, even though he got it before the break. I remembered a second part of my idea train there that, yeah, so this could connect us with Plagueis if they were created by the Force. We also discussed whether or not they're potentially a dyad. And I was really against that idea because I think it's too quick to bring back the dyad as an idea. But if we know that Palpatine is interested in Plagueis and what he's got going on, we know that 160 or so, some odd years from now, he's really into this Rey and Kylo dyad thing. And he's like, ooh, a Force dyad, that's rare. And he's thinking, where have I seen this before? It's in Mei and Osha. That's, again, I think it works out. I don't know if I like that, but I could see that working out maybe. So there's a connection to Plagueis, to Palpatine, to the sequel trilogy, like a pretty decent through line. I still think doing the dyad this early is too soon, but that could be cool.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. We have some other questions, of course, though. One, we have some from Thrawny. They ask, why did they show the kids looking up at Kalnaka so much throughout this episode? Are they foreshadowing something? My gut reaction is just these are isolated kids in a community that they only see like 30 people, and a Wookiee is weird to them. So I don't know. That's kind of my thought.
Yeah. I didn't even notice. Carpet.
Yeah. I didn't notice that they were looking at him. I mean, they cut to him working on his bike a lot, but I don't know. I don't know if it means anything.
I agree with you, Jacob.
Yeah. So another thing they asked about, I'm going to turn to Oz for this one because I think he's the one that's talked about this kind of stuff the most in the past. I just want to know kind of our thoughts on discussions of inspiration from like Kurosawa or Rashomon. I don't even know what that is. I'm assuming it's a movie or something. But I don't know.
Yeah. So unfortunately, as much as I have wanted to become a Kurosawa enjoyer, I have still not really dug much into him. I've almost bought the Criterion Collection channel, like just to watch all these, because there's, I mean, George was never shy to mention that he's basically just aping Akira Kurosawa, and Rashomon is one of his movies, Jacob, to clear that up. I don't know the story well enough to comment on this. Have any of y'all seen it?
I haven't, but I've heard it brought up a lot and have heard that Leslie bring it up too a lot.
Yeah, so it's kind of like the Bryce Dallas Howard episode from the Cara Dune one from season one of Mando. Mm-hmm. Is another, what is that, Seven Soldiers?
Yes.
Again, I am unfortunately sort of helpless, so I appreciate you thinking higher of me than you should have.
I guess we got to do some research here.
Yeah, maybe I'll watch that this week. I'm up late a lot holding a baby, so I've got plenty of time.
I think Rashomon, if that's how you pronounce it, I think that's like the key one, that if we were to watch like one, that's the one we need to watch.
Yeah.
What? All right, let me find out what streaming services is on.
Yeah.
Criterion.
Yeah, I think Criterion Collection.
That's going to be a no for me, dog. Anyways.
They might have a free trial situation.
All right. Well, we got some more questions from Chris. He just asked like us to clown about what we think happened while Osha was in her room. Is it the Jedi? Is it someone else? Did Mei just absolutely wreck everyone? What are our thoughts?
So I almost went into this earlier, and I'm glad I didn't. I mean, I'm kind of right now on the train of like, I don't know that Mei is in her right mind, at least for the majority of that time. There might be flashes where she is, but we've joked about how crazy a jump it is to say, I don't want you to leave, to I'm going to kill you. And I do wonder if it's supposed to be insane. Like it's not actually her own line of thinking. And then I noticed on my second watch that as she's burning the journal, she does have like a tear streaming down her face, which like could just be chalked up to an emotional moment. But I think could be credit to this is clearly not what she wants necessarily. And I also found that once Osha crawled through the hole, I don't know if it was just like the editing of the scene or if something funky is going on, but I was very confused about like where May was in that like reactor room. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know if I was like, is that a result of maybe some, we're seeing Osha's point of view in this episode. So maybe like their mind tricks being played on her about where May is in the room, if she's in there at all, or if May has access to these darker powers that allow her to like weirdly like teleport through the room. I don't know. But I have obviously a lot of not even full clown theories, just clown ideas. But I just think something is obviously something more is going on. But I think with May specifically.
There was a little visual cue I caught on my second watch through. It's before the ceremony. They're all just like chilling and like they hear a noise or something like that. And Coral runs out and looks at the reactor. Yeah. So something, you know, some sort of sabotage or something maybe is happening at that point. There's a trailer clip where you see someone like scaling the outside of the fortress. So yeah, I think this is something that we will, you know, obviously find out more information on in the coming episodes. So
I think we're going to see that each of the Jedi were responsible in their own way of doing something that led to the tragedy of this night. I do think there's also a lot of actual possession that's happening. And I do think that part of that is going to be specifically with May. I think May was very much controlled through this, whether it was, you know, her mom or whether it was through maybe even the Sith themselves. Because I do think that they're lurking around very closely during all these events. And I think that what sort of for me, because I've been really wondering about it, was that, you know, it's very a quick turn to like she wants to kill her sister and there's all this clues that it makes it look like that. But I think that could very easily be a red herring. And I think a big sign of that is at the end, she goes back to the tree to look for her sister. If she's like looking to like full out, like want to just kill her. Okay. Yeah. Maybe she wants to go there to kill her, but that was not a look of like disappointment. Like, oh, my sister's not here, man. I don't get to kill her today. Like, no, that is like I expected my sister to be here in a sense of comfort and connection, and she wasn't. There is obviously something then that happened during all of those crazy events. And yeah, maybe it's trauma and tension and all that. But I think that there's a lot more foul play, and they keep showing, you know, the possession of eyes and such. Like, I think that is a very huge visual clue to like let us know that like there are way more supernatural things that are going on.
Yeah.
She notably does not have all black eyes, though, in that scene versus when...
That's true. When Torben gets taken over.
Yep.
I think, personally, what I think happened, or what I think maybe happened, in addition to the poison options I mentioned earlier, I think last night we all jumped on a call, a dozen or so of us, that we do that every week on when these new episodes, and I think the first thing I said was, y'all, I'm pretty sure the Jedi killed those gay witches, because that's what I think happened. I don't necessarily think that the Jedi like went in there with their sabers on with the intention of killing them, but I think that they had a fight, whether or not that was like intentionally provoked or just misunderstanding, I don't know. But one, because they shouldn't have died from the fire, so I don't think it's that. Two, we know that Torben gets a scar, presumably this night. I think, and I know that you can see him in the background. He looks kind of beat up later on the ship, but it's really like kind of background and out of focus. But the most important thing is like seeing May burn down this fortress is not enough to like ruin these people's lives. That's like a major bummer, obviously, but it's not enough to make Torben like shut himself off from all other living beings and then kill himself the moment he sees May 16 years later. So something dark happened with the Jedi that I think involved them having to or deciding to kill Mother Inesea or some of them. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously, like, yeah, Torben had something to, like, he regretted. And it seemed that neither him nor Indara were surprised that she was alive. So,
and I don't really think Sol was surprised too. I don't know. I mean, I know that he said he was surprised.
Yeah,
I feel like he knew.
I have a question kind of regarding this before we move on from this crazy night of who knows what the heck happened. Do you think that there is a world that one of the Jedi, I would think it would be either more than likely Indara, but maybe it's not. But one of them is actually a traitor and is like a Sith apprentice at this point, or even a Sith master at this point. And they're the ones that are like teaming up with, I forget the one mother's name.
Quarrel.
Yes, thank you, Quarrel.
I don't think it's Indara because she's dead. And I feel like it'd be an insane thing to just kill him off.
I'm more talking about like that night. Like that's
like if they were plants.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't see it. I can't see what their angle would be to go in and screw up this ritual. Like, why lead the Jedi to the coven if they're working with the coven?
Yeah, I can see. I think the Jedi have some nefarious purpose of sorts, but I don't know if it's connected to the Sith specifically. So, but yeah, there's a lot going on. Jedi Murphy also asked how we think the coven were killed, and you know, we're pretty sure not by fire, be poisoned.
Yeah,
I had said something that like I didn't see like visually, I didn't see any like clues towards it, but like the like Sol dragged Osho away so quickly. But what if it's because they like had lightsaber cuts or something like that?
I wondered that.
So
yeah, like don't look at them; they're burned. But. Yeah.
I'm
also wondering sort of, I know that we see them wielding bow and arrows, but like Torben's scar seems like a sword fight kind of scar on his face. So I'm wondering,
if you pay attention to the trailers, you know what it's from.
There's a clue.
Oh, okay. I guess I need to
rewatch the trailers or not.
It's like a millisecond scene. Like it's very. Yeah. Blink and you miss it.
I haven't watched the trailers basically since they came out. I watched the blurry celebration footage like 1,000 times over the past year. And then once we got it in high def, I watched it. And then I was like, all right, cool. Now we're.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to watch the show. Don't need Kimitson.
Yeah, now we're in the end game.
So. No. But yeah.
One thing I'm now thinking about that's not directly related to the question, but let me clown for a second. I am wondering if I really want to go back and rewatch the first episode now and see if there are any kind of parallels or if I'm just making them up between Osho chasing after what we learn is a vision of May and the scene from when she's kind of chasing her like in that reactor room, especially with her falling off a cliff and everything. I'm now wondering if there are some maybe visual clues there about what could be going on.
And so she's like seeing her the same way she last saw her 16 years ago in her vision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And she also is chasing after her when, in the temple with Torben in episode 2. So
yeah.
Yes.
I'm sure there's also gonna be lots of revelations around their little like poem that they tell each other, as well. So I give you you give me that whole thing. So
yeah, in fact, we didn't really talk about that in their creation, but they say like, what do they say? Born of one, but now two, something along those lines. Yeah. Like, it's I mean, there's
they I have about mitosis, so you know,
yeah. I haven't formed it well enough to clown about it, but there's something about me that thinks they're not just twins. If you read the High Republic comics, there is a pair of Bond twins called Tarek and Sarret. I don't think that's what's going on. They're very cool characters. Mm-hmm. but that's sort of where my head's at. Like, is there something more than just like, oh, they're two twins? Like, what? I mean, I guess the dyad is an option. I think there's something there. I just have to figure out what it is, hopefully before they tell me what it is. I'll be wrong either way, but I want to at least
of course
come up with a theory. I don't have enough for a theory yet.
So the specific poem real quick is, you're with me, I'm with you, always one but born as two. As above sits the stars and below lies the sea. I give you you and you give me me.
Yeah, so always one, born as two. I mean, that could just be like, you know, we're
tied together. Forever. Yeah.
Yeah, but
the thread is
it could be more literal.
But it could also be the fact, because I had also clowned with this theory, that they are like one being that has been like split into two, into some supernatural where literally the light side of the force and the dark side of the force has ripped this being in half, essentially.
There's a, I think it was an interview or something. It's on the StarWars.com posted, like, talking about the different actors and their inspiration. And Amanda Lutz directly says, like, if being inspired by the masculine and the feminine for separate characters and the yin and the yang and all this stuff. So, you know, you might be onto something.
I think that's kind of where my head's at.
Also the kind of almost visually somewhat similar spiral tattoo kind of looks like a yin and a yang if you squint enough. Yeah. But.
Yeah. And I think the other reason I'm wondering if there's something is because they played real coy about them being twins, about Amanda playing two characters, and I don't really know why they did that, because it's not a big reveal in the show. It happens pretty quickly that you find out they're twins, and it's not even played like a surprise. So I'm wondering if there's something more that they were hiding, or if they just thought for some reason they should hide that there's twins. I don't know.
Yeah, a lot of questions. I'm sure all of our theories are wrong, but, you know, they're also hilarious. So I hope you enjoyed our clownery. If you want to ask some ridiculous questions for us to get up to next week, of course, hop into the Discord and we'd be happy to answer those with you, or, you know, chat about the show amongst yourselves and with us in there as well. A quick reminder, this episode has been brought to you by the Utini Dispatch. If you want some weekly news about Star Wars and all sorts of other great topics, written by our very own JG with some help from some other staff, check out utini.com/dispatch to get signed up for that. But that'll do it for this week's episode of Bounty Hunt. Thank you so much for joining us. If you're looking for other great podcasts about Star Wars, nerd culture, and sports, be sure to check out the rest of our great lineup of the Utini Podcast Network. We'd also appreciate it if you left a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you're already a proud member of the United on Patreon, thank you so much. An extra special thank you goes to Brian Dooley, Carl Sander, Michael Fry, and Raymond Bizinski on our High Council, and Captains James T., Ashley Ingalls, Colton Fife, and Chris Carrizo for all their amazing support. You can head on over to Discord. We're continuing the conversation about this week's episode in the SW The Acolyte channel. Huge shout out to our editor, Kyle, for his excellent work in getting us to your feet so quickly, and Wes for his Utini Network support. Thanks as always to our fantastic listeners. That'll do it for us this week. May the Force be with you, and we will see you next time.
You've been listening to the Bounty Hunt Podcast.
Yeah? Good.
To learn more about other Utini Patreon exclusives, visit utini.com.